What's going on, Blue Jays fans? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. And as always, you can find my work on Twitter at Weiss Sports, on Sportsnet at ESPN's The Undefeated, as well as play-by-play on Saga 960 AM. Thank you for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. I just want to give a huge shout out to the fans who do that. We are free and available on all our platforms. Obviously, we got a busy show ahead today with the Blue Jays offseason. It has begun, technically. I mean, it's only been a few days since, of course, they are eliminated. And I'm pleased to bring back MLB analyst Jen Smith to the program. Jen, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It feels a little surreal to already be talking about the offseason with the backdrop of the playoffs still continuing, but with Ross Atkins speaking today, here we are.
Yes, indeed. Here we are. Thought at this moment we'd be preparing maybe for a division series. I feel like I'm going to be saying this whole month as we record episodes in October, like, gee, you know, when one team is doing well or winning, that should have been the Jays, but alas, here we are talking about the offseason, and we're going to have a lot of offseason content to bring you on Locked On Blue Jays through October, November, winter meetings. You don't need to worry. You come to Locked On Blue Jays for that. But we're going to get started, though. Today's show, we're going to start off with talking about Ross Atkins, Blue Jays general manager, his end of season media availability. We're then going to get into sort of broad, big picture, what the Blue Jays are looking for in the offseason from the hitting position player perspective. And then we're going to wrap things up with talking about the pitching side. Jen, let's get into the Ross Atkins end of season media availability. You've covered these. I've obviously listened to them over the years. They're obviously events that happen. I mean, even I think when a team wins a championship, there's also an end of season media avail. Usually that's the real happy one because the team obviously won, but look, I mean, we sort of knew that Ross Atkins wasn't necessarily going to reveal the whole playbook. He wasn't going to tell all the state secrets. But just from a broad perspective, big picture, what did you make of his end-of-season media availability today?
Well, Ross Atkins, first of all, wouldn't be doing his job well if he gave away a lot of state secrets when doing these, right? To be in this position, you have to be able to answer every question without really giving any detail. So, you know, I'm not sure how much we learned, except up right up at the end when it was asked about the coaching staff and, you know, if anybody was a lock for next year. And he confirmed that Charlie Montoyo, as well as the rest of the coaching staff, would return, much to the chagrin, I suppose, of some Twitter users, but I think that this was a fairly predictable announcement, to be quite honest. So predictable that it wasn't simply mentioned by Ross. It was in response to a question that came right at the end. So that, I think, you know, was interesting simply because it puts that question to rest, right? People can stop talking about it. People can stop wondering, lamenting, whatever the case may be, whether you like or hate this decision, at least that can be set aside and the front office can go about doing its work this offseason. So I thought that was actually good to state that and get that out of the way with. And look, you know, Ross Atkins expressed feelings of being very optimistic about this team, not only the position, obviously, that it's currently in, but the ability to improve moving forward. They have the prospect capital to do so in terms of making trades this offseason. It sounds like there's been conversations with ownership and that money might be on the table to increase spending. So that bodes well perhaps for free agent signings. So it seems like they are in a good position to improve on this year's improvements and, you know, ideally take that next step next year. And obviously that next step is the postseason. And I think that's absolutely critical. You can't go from a 91 win season and work backwards, right? So clearly the end goal has to be next year to actually somehow make the playoffs in this division.
Absolutely. And we talked about this, Jen, on previous episodes, that's where it's different, I feel like. And Ross sort of started his end of season media availability talking about that basically we're excited and optimistic about the offseason, that we want to play deep into the postseason. So already he is setting those expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about one of the silver linings of this year, despite not making the playoffs, is that now there are those expectations there that you're going to be a postseason club, that you're going to be, you know, hopefully playing deep into October. I mean, your point off the top was very accurate. I mean, you're obviously not going to learn some earth-shattering thing, much to probably some media members' chagrin. They would love to hear everyone to be the open book, but that's just the reality of sports, and they're not going to reveal the whole cards. But your point about the ownership, to me, was, I think, a huge takeaway, because obviously, you know, there is that link, right? There is that partnership, Mark Shapiro, with Rogers. And to me, what was incredibly optimistic, because let's face it, they've received criticism in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, from fans and people on Twitter that, look, they're not willing to spend, and they're willing to sort of do these moves around the edges rather than make those big plays. But to hear, to me, Ross in the media availability say, like, you know, we have the full support of ownership to go forward and make the moves necessary to improve and to be a competitive team, that's huge. And we've already seen it. Like, we saw it with Hyunjin Ryu. We definitely saw it with George Springer last offseason. Mm-hmm. But now to have that verbal, you know, support and basically verbal saying that, like, look, we're, you know, this is actually happening, I think is just massive signal to send to Blue Jays fans that this front office wants to win now. And Ross Atkins even said, we're all in. And I think that's pretty big.
Well, it also struck me that one of the things Atkins said today was that ownership has been part of the plan all along, and that they are constantly, the front office is constantly communicating the plan to ownership. And he mentions from 6 years ago to 6 months ago to 6 weeks ago, right? And I think that serves as a really good reminder. This front office came in with a plan on how to essentially dismantle the previous team, which had aged itself out of being in contention, and rebuilding using the young core that they knew was coming up from the minor leagues, and then supplementing when the time was right, not just spending money willy-nilly, you know, as a stopgap measure or whatever, but actually having a plan in place. And I think it was really important that he actually mentioned that, because, you know, as fans watching the team year after year, getting invested, getting upset, you know, if the team falls short of expectations, you know, I think it really is critical to remember that when they walked in here, they did walk in with a plan in mind. And it's, you know, pretty, I think, remarkable what they've actually been able to do in that turnaround time, from dismantling, you know, that 2015-2016 roster to where they are right now. And clearly they are in a good position to continue improving.
They certainly are. And I thought another interesting sort of quote that Ross said, it was in response to Shida Vidi of Sportsnet's question when he asked about, you know, the gap between the Tampa Bay Rays. Yes. Because obviously, look, I mean, the Blue Jays were one game out of a wild card spot, but I think for this franchise, they got to be looking at the top, right? They got to be thinking about winning an AL East that gets you out of the wild card scenario. It'll get you out of, even if the playoffs do expand, you know, maybe next year, who knows? It'll get you out of that first round that, you know, is a lot of luck has to go your way in a one game scenario, or perhaps a best of three. It gets you to a best of five in the ALDS. And Ross said, look, I mean, the gap isn't that large. And he said, of course, we strive to be above them. But he did, though, say later that, you know, if we bring, you know, if it was a perfect world, that he, you know, he would obviously want to bring the whole team back as it currently was would be a great starting point. But when I heard that, frankly, like, that current core got you 91 wins. So for me, obviously, again, I mean, like, a lot needs to be determined and a lot needs to be seen about what happens. But I do think that the team will look different, yes. But I do think that moves need to be made so that they can get, you know, more than 91 wins and be closer to that top. Whether that's a signing, whether that's a trade, who knows? I know that Ross did say prospect capital. And let's face it, prospect capital, the point of accumulating that is to make those necessary trades to win. So it is interesting that, you know, he would go there and really say about that, bringing everyone back and whatnot. Because I do think that moves do need to be made to make the team better.
Yeah, I interpreted that comment as suggesting that if they had started the year with the roster that they finished with, that they would have obviously won more games because sure, they wouldn't have had certain bullpen relievers like Chatwood, for example, Brad Hand and so forth, you know, have pitched in any games. So I took that, I interpreted it as saying, if we started with this exact, you know, team with this exact roster at the beginning of the year, then we would have been right there fighting for, the division, you know, championship. Like, we would have been right there with the Rays. We would have certainly won more than the 91 games that we won. Obviously they can't bring everybody back. So then that brings us back to the work that they need to do this offseason to fill any gaps that end up forming, right? We don't know what will happen with Simeon. We don't know what will happen with Ray or Mats and so forth. And then, you know, he also talked about roster lineup construction and the need perhaps to get more versatile in terms of both the handedness of the batters as well as the type of hitters. So those are all things that they're going to have to take a look at and see, you know, where exactly they feel that they lost games that were winnable and thus how to win those types of games next season.
One more thing I'll say before we take a break and go to the next segment about this is Ross also talked about the group gelling together, mm-hmm, the camaraderie amongst the team. And he said, quote, I mean, I could not be more pleased with how that group gelled. At the end of the year, it was easy to see. You didn't need to be in the clubhouse to see. And look, I think, you know, he was obviously stating the obvious that this group and the veterans and the young core certainly came together very nicely. And there was something really lovable about this team. And he mentioned the word inspire a lot, that the performance this year, you know, definitely inspire not just, you know, longtime baseball fans, but new fans to the game. And I just think that reaffirms this idea that this front office is really committed. Like they're not going to be working around the fringes. They're going to be making the necessary moves to make this team one of the best teams in baseball, because let's face it. I mean, the clock is starting, you know, to tick. I mean, obviously they have some years before these guys need to be paid, but obviously you want to put yourselves in any time you're a competitive team, you want to try to, you know, maximize the chances you have to win. And Ross knows that when this team does well, Rogers Center is filled to the brim. I mean, hopefully by next year, full capacity will be back and that will take place. So I just think it's very interesting for him to make that comment, and that I think he recognizes that when this team is good, people are going to flock to the ballpark to watch them. And I really think it's going to be a big turnover from last year, translating over to this year. Carryover, I mean, I should say.
It's stood out to me that he mentioned that not only did the veteran players have an impact on the young players, but he in turn, he really thought the younger players had impacted the veterans in terms of their energy and, as you said, their camaraderie, and that the whole team, although it might have taken a little bit of time, the whole team really did end up coming together, showing support for one another, and that it seemed genuine. And, you know, we've seen teams, you know, fielded that appear to be fun, appear to get along, and we learn maybe later on that behind the scenes, not quite everything is that, you know, quite what it appears to be on the field. And we know that perhaps, you know, they've had to improve through, you know, addition through subtraction, which is something that he actually mentioned. That was a phrase that he actually used in his presser today. And so, yeah, I thought his comments were very pointed, right? We have, not only do we have a talented team, but we have a really exciting team that actually supports one another. And so they essentially have the two components of what they need to field a very good team next year. And, you know, to potentially either attract other players to the team or keep players around. You know, he did mention, for example, that he thought it boded well that the Jays were part of Ray and Simeon having such good seasons, right? So it wasn't just that the two of them had impacted the team's performance, but that perhaps the team also was part of their improvement this year. And I thought that was a really interesting comment that he made. Very, very pointed.
No doubt. No doubt. And the bats this offseason, the hitting, I think figuring that out, you mentioned Marcus Semien. That's going to be our next segment on our show. But first, let me talk to you about Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? Well, there has to be a better way. The better way is Rock Auto. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and their prices are reliably low for every customer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays. Lucas Weiss, Jen Smith. Again, to all the listeners, thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. So, Jen, the bats. Ross Atkins addressed it in his media availability. I mean, the big sort of element, you know, elephant in the room is going to be the pending UFAs. Most notably, Marcus Semien, Robbie Ray, Steven Matz was also mentioned as well. Marcus Semien. And Ross Atkins definitely said that, you know, the dialogue was constant and basically what you would expect for him to say in that situation. After a few days of, you know, sleeping, you know, getting over the loss of the Jays and sleeping about it and whatnot, thinking about this offseason, for me, I would really like for the Blue Jays to keep Marcus. But for me, after thinking about it, I feel like it's starting to become a little bit more, you know, impossible. I mean, maybe not impossible. I mean, it could happen, but I just think it's becoming even more unlikely. I think Marcus, his family's in California, term money, et cetera. You know, he's deserved it, rightfully so. I mean, when you look at the Jays in terms of their offense, I mean, obviously their offense had an incredible season, but I think Ross definitely said about improving the balance of the lineup, getting more left-handed bats is going to be critical for this team going forward. just what are your thoughts on you know about the whole Marcus Semien thing? Because for me, I would love to see him here, but I would argue like he's probably the least likely to come back to Toronto.
I would agree with that. I heard after his presser, Ross Atkins appeared on TSN 1050, and I heard that interview. And so he was asked about Marcus Semien, and he said he didn't obviously want to speak for him, but that he thought that probably family came first, followed by winning, and then I believe closely followed by location. So, you know, if that is in fact the case and the family is in California, then we could probably deduce that if he were to be offered a really good contract from a California team, that there's a very good chance he's going to take that over anything else, right? Whether or not he still views himself as a shortstop, as he previously said, you know, whether or not that's his priority is to return to that position, I really don't know. But Ross Atkins also made it clear today that Bo Bichette is the shortstop moving forward. So I agree. I think that it is very unlikely that they are able to re-sign Semien, as much as, you know, they might really want to. I'm just not really sure that the two sides are going to be able to come together, even if the Jays make him a really great offer, right? The Jays could offer him a fantastic contract. And then when you factor in all those other things, that's what tips the scales in terms of him leaving. So I really don't know. I don't think you can combat that, you know, unless you're going to go so far over and above the value in terms of, you know, the contracts. I really don't know how you can combat those other factors.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Marcus is from the Bay Area. The Giants, just had an over 100 win season. Brandon Crawford's a guy that's not going to be playing every day. Mm-hmm. They're going to open the vault, I think, for Marcus Semien, and rightfully so. And then it just becomes a matter of that's where his family is. He's going to get paid. He's going to get his bag. Why not go to a place where you feel comfortable, where your family is, et cetera. And, you know, to me, good for Marcus. I mean, that's, you know, that's his right as a free agent. But as it pertains to the Blue Jays, though, what then, in your opinion, happens to then second base? Because is this something that do they go out and get a guy? Does Kevin Biggio become the second base? We don't really know, right? I mean, Kevin Biggio, I would argue he had sort of a lost season this year just due to injuries, right? So I think there's still a lot of questions to be answered about that spot, but it certainly leaves a gaping hole just given what Marcus Semien was able to do.
From a team perspective, I believe they still believe in Biggio.
Yeah.
What exactly they believe about him is to be determined, right? Do they believe that he is a utility guy who they need to move around the field? You know, do they believe that he's somebody that you only bat in certain situations against certain pitchers? That's what's to be determined. I don't think that he is the everyday second baseman moving forward. I think that they are going to find somebody to fill Semien's role, assuming that Semien leaves. I think that they are going to look for somebody, whether it be in free agency or in trade. I don't think that that's going to be filled internally.
Yeah. And the question is because to me, like Marcus, I mean, like obviously his bat and his numbers this year were incredible. I think it really added, you know, more offense to that lineup where he was batting second. The question is, can you find someone that has that offense? I don't necessarily think so. Now, the question is as well, do you need someone with that type of offense? Ideally, but you also have Springer, Vladdy, Bo, Teoscar, who are providing that for you. So to me, you're going to want somebody who's, you know, who can hit, obviously, who can get on base, all that stuff. But can also defend, because that's one of the things that Charlie Montoyo and even the front office said last year. It's like run prevention. You don't want to go backwards on infield defense. So I think you want to find those two, you know, try to satisfy those two areas. It's still a big loss losing Marcus Semien, though.
Absolutely.
But, you know, like just given, you know, the stats, what he can provide on defense, the intangibles, all that. Like, I think it is still going to be a big loss, but you try to find, you know, try to fill that hole. But it'll be interesting to see who is available ultimately.
Well, Marcus Semien is obviously going to get paid based on what he did this past season, right? And so then the question becomes, do you see him replicating those numbers? And for how long do you see him replicating those numbers? And if you were to offer him a contract that would beat out anything that was offered to him in order to retain him, at what point does that contract value start to look a little suspect, given, you know, as he ages and given the inevitable decrease in production? And then also paying him that kind of money, in what other ways does that hamstring you from being able to improve the team? Two words that Ross Atkins kept using today with regards to the lineup was balanced and versatile. And so he acknowledged that they have a lot of power, but that they need balance, that they need a balance between guys with power and with high batting averages versus those who are higher on base percentage hitters, right? So as you said, they might replace Semien not necessarily with the same type of hitter who is giving the same type of production, in favor of having a more balanced and versatile lineup.
And speaking of that, I mean, the other sort of hole right now, which is going to be talked about, you know, really, you know, start of the offseason through free agency, is third base. Because that's been sort of a revolving door this year, right? I mean, Camavinggio started. It wasn't that great. We had sort of this, you know, Santiago Espinal, Braden Valera had opportunities. I mean, obviously, Espinal had a great end of the season. But again, small sample, right? Like, we don't know what it's going to be over a full 162. But I liked what Espinal provided. I mean, obviously, you're probably going to want to go after, maybe make a trade for a Jose Ramirez type of guy. I mean, that would be the ideal, getting a guy like Jose Ramirez. But if, for whatever reason, they can't, I mean, Santiago Espinal could be, you know, a backup. Who knows? I mean, I really liked what he provided. Again, small sample, but he's sort of that, you know, he's sort of a hustle guy. He did his job for towards the end of the season, but I think it is a bit of a hole right now in terms of when you look at the offense, and then as well as the infield defense in particular, in terms of where it's going to be there. But again, Ross definitely said, like, he likes those guys, but definitely open for outside additions.
Yes, he did mention today that, you know, one of the areas for improvement was the infield, right? So when he said that, I assumed that he was thinking of having to replace Semien and then clearly the third base, right? So he mentioned all four guys who, you know, could potentially play third base for this team moving forward, right? You know, in Espinal, Biggio, Smith, and Valera, but he said that they were open to seeking outside help. And I thought that was telling, right?
Yeah.
Clearly he's not going to give it away and say, oh yes, we have our third baseman, you know, everything is good. But I did think that when he said that he's clearly, you know, wanting to improve at that position. And I think if Jose Ramirez is available, I absolutely believe that they are going to go after him. I don't think that they're probably satisfied with their internal options as they currently stand, right? Espinal would be a heck of a backup,
yeah,
to somebody else.
Of course. And this is why you accumulate the prospect capital, right?
Yeah.
You know, to make these sorts of moves. And I mean, look, and you look at the numbers of Jose Ramirez this year. I mean, he was an all-star, 36 homers, 103 RBIs. He hits for power. And the thing about him is he is better than all those three guys defensively as well, which was a big issue for the team this year. So, look, I think, look, there's still a lot to be determined, but I do think you're right. I mean, they are going to try and probably look at that position and say to themselves, like, if we can add someone like a Ramirez, who then can maybe somewhat replace the Marcus Semien offense, maybe not that much what we saw this year, but still add depth to the offense, I think that's a win-win for this ball club. And then hopefully, you know, you try to find that and do whatever it takes to make that sort of move. Because again, you're all in, you're trying to win right now. Kyle Seager, another name that sort of popped up. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's another interesting guy. But who knows, right? So I think there are some options there for the Blue Jays front office to figure out for that position.
Well, and we've already seen this front office, you know, spend prospect capital in order to acquire Jose Berríos. They needed starting pitching help. They went out and they got it, and they were willing to give up the prospects in order to get somebody who they thought would help them, not just this season, but also moving forward, right? So we already know that they're willing to spend some of those prospects that they've accumulated over the years. So yes, I would absolutely expect that if they have the opportunity to improve what they currently have, then they are going to go ahead and do that.
Pitching. Oh, mm-hmm. Pitching. Every team needs it. The Blue Jays will certainly need to think about pitching as well in the offseason. We're going to talk about that in just a bit. But first, let me talk to you about betonline.ag. We are back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on for another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use your promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. All right, welcome back to Locked On Jays. Lucas Weiss, Jen Smith, again, for all of the listeners, thank you so much for making Locked On Jays your first listen of the day. Drop things up, pitching, so important. Ross Atkins talked about it in his end of season media availability, of course, the big elephant in the room, Robbie Ray and Steven Matz. I mean, it's going to be another one as well. You can't forget about him because he also had pretty good season as well. Of course, Robbie Ray likely to win the Cy Young Award. Jen, I mean, I think again, similar to Semien, they're gonna keep the dialogue going. If there's an opportunity to keep one or the other, I think the more likely one will probably be Robbie Ray. But I'm a little bit hesitant, to be honest with you. I mean, let's face it, Ray's a guy that has only really had one great year. I mean, really, which was this past season, only two pitch guy. Concerns with him third time through the order. And he's getting up there and in terms of age. So he'll probably want, again, the term, the money. You can't, again, you know, you can't go wrong with having more starting pitching. But I don't know. I think the Blue Jays front office needs to really think about it. And even Ross talked about this today. He alluded to the term and the risks that carries.
Right. And they're in a much better position to evaluate that than any of us. Sure. What Ray was able to do this past season was absolutely incredible. And clearly Pete Walker had a really big role to play in that. Right. So they might have a sense as to whether or not they think he would be able to reproduce this season. He's 30 years old, right? So he's, you know, beginning to get up there in terms of wanting to sign him to a large contract. Mind you, Ryu was 32 when they signed him.
Sure.
So, you know, a couple of years older, but then again, and I have no idea whether or not it has anything to do with, you know, just the aging process, but Ryu hasn't exactly been the guy this season, right? He wasn't exactly the guy that we would have expected to see, you know, on the mound, right? So it's a really difficult balance between trying to sign guys to contracts that they're going to, that are actually going to make them want to sign with the team versus, you know, that flexibility later on and whether or not these contracts are going to age well. So, yeah, I don't know. It's really difficult to judge just how aggressively they will go after Ray. You know, they already have, if you look, take a look at, you know, they've got Manoah, they've got Ryu, they've got Berríos. So they've already got a pretty good foundation for their starting rotation next year. I don't know if they will keep one or both of Ray or Mats. If they were to keep one of them, now you've really got something at that point, right? You know, you at least have some certainty going into next season. You have some idea of what it is you're going to get from these guys. So yes, you're right. I actually would be surprised if they re-signed Ray.
Yeah.
And I keep saying on Twitter, you know, re-sign Semien, re-sign Ray.
Yeah.
And it's not my money. And hey, you know, go out and spend away, right? But the reality, of course, is that this is a business and there is risk that needs to be evaluated. So in reality, I would be surprised if Ray was re-signed to this team.
Yeah, because the thing about starting pitching is, I mean, you mentioned that they already have a solid foundation going in. Assuming, like, let's say, I mean, maybe they sign Mats, maybe they don't, maybe they bring Ray back, maybe they don't. I mean, they still have three good options. And then maybe during the season trade deadline, if you need to go after that starting pitcher, you can, like they did going after Berríos, because you have, I sound like a broken record, the prospect capital to do so. And I also think that the Blue Jays need to think about Jose Berríos too. I mean, I know he has an additional year of control. I mean, maybe this might be a punt to the next offseason, but I mean, he's an interesting one too to think about, right? I mean, obviously you're going to think about next season, what he does, but again, you know, you need to start to think about, okay, trying to piece this all together. I mean, I agree with you. I just think for me that Ray does carry risks. I mean, we don't know what it's going to be next season. We don't know if he's going to be the same dominant self that we saw this year. I do think, though, that they'll probably try. Who knows how hard they will try. My question for you is, if they don't sign either of those two, they can't, do they go after someone in free agency? Do they go after another starting pitcher? Or do they just say to themselves, let's just roll the dice with what we have and then try to fix anything we can at the trade deadline?
I think they would have to get somebody. You know, he was asked today about what role he sees for Pearson moving forward. And based on his answer, it sounded like they were, you know, they said that they were looking for him to give extended outings and to have sort of closer to a starter role, but was clearly non-committal on whether or not Pearson would be a starter moving forward. And of course, with his injury concerns, you know, he only appeared in 12 games this season. He only pitched 15 innings, right? So he's certainly not somebody that you could count on to be main contributor to your starting rotation next season. He was also asked about Ryu and managing his injuries, managing his innings. And Atkins said that they would be, you know, clearly they would be open to working with Ryu, skipping starts if they needed to. So who knows how that Ryu season will go next year, right? So I think, you know, even though they have a good foundation, there's a, you know, a question mark there, at least in terms of Ryu. You don't know what you're going to get from Pearson. So if they, especially if they were to lose both Ray and Matz, they have to add one more this offseason, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. And the Pearson thing is an interesting one. I mean, because, you know, of course, he's being assessed this week to see if a procedure for a sports hernia is needed. Of course, he felt strong as the season ended. But again, small sample size, right?
Right.
They were open to seeing what type of roles he can be. My hunch right now is probably bullpen. Again, we'll have to
see too
early, but I want him to go out there and throw that high velocity one or two pitches and get guys out. I mean, late in games, you know, sixth or seventh inning type of guy. Hopefully, you never know, right? I mean, maybe he works in the offseason and he develops some of those pitches, but I think right now, in my opinion, probably bullpen. And speaking of the bullpen, Ross Atkins was also asked about the bullpen. He had, of course, high praise for Jordan Romano, Tim Meza, rightfully so. But that's sort of also a little bit of a cloud that's hanging over the team because bullpens are very fickle things, right? Maybe one season, Tim Meza is great. Next season, who knows? Hopefully that isn't the case. Hopefully Jordan Romano, same thing. Hopefully he continues to grow. But let's be honest. I mean, the first half of the season, the bullpen costed the Blue Jays a lot of games. So they're going to need to, you know, hit the jackpot, if you will, in terms of some of their bullpen pieces. Again, it's a bit early, but I do think it's still very important for the team to figure out because you don't want to have what happened this year where the bullpen just wasn't effective.
Well, that bullpen was abysmal early on in the season. Yeah. And, you know, however many wins they cost the team, you know, that's the difference between being in the postseason and not being in the postseason, clearly, right? I mean, there are other reasons, you know, other factors we could point to. But if we just look at those bullpen losses right there, there's games that the team needs in order to actually be in the postseason. One of his interesting comments was that, you know, as much praise as he had for Meza and Romano, he mentioned the fact that they were then complemented by acquiring both Simber and Richards, and that those two helped to stabilize things and put other guys in a position to be more successful. So he was clearly acknowledging the fact that the bullpen just wasn't good enough early in the season. And that one of the reasons why so many pitchers were unsuccessful in their roles was because they were being asked to pitch in circumstances that they were not suited to. And so clearly that is something that, you know, they did manage to stabilize, but it was too late at that point, perhaps, in terms of getting back those missed opportunities and those winnable games, right? So, you know, that acknowledgement today from Atkins, and it's a glaringly obvious statement, but that acknowledgement does suggest that the bullpen is going to be a key, a key factor in their offseason work.
So to wrap things up, I mean, we're going to obviously talk a lot more about this offseason, but I think in general, if you're a Blue Jays fan right now, again, we're recording this on Wednesday. The vibes are probably you're still wishing that your team would make the postseason. But I would argue that things are pretty optimistic. I mean, it could, you know, we've had off seasons where, my goodness, there's not a lot to be excited about going into the next season. I think with this, though, the big thing is that they're really going all in to try to win now. And I think that's so important with the core that they have, the players that they have. But big picture, Jen, what would you say would be a successful offseason for this team? Is it, you know, focusing strictly on the hitting? Is it trying to balance both? Can you somehow make, you know, get a miracle and bring one of Semien Ray back? What would you say would be a successful offseason for this front office?
Obviously, if they were able to re-sign either Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien, it means that they see the value in those players moving forward. And I think either one would be an absolute win. I don't think either one is happening. So to me, a successful offseason would be to add a reliable starting pitcher, not one that you have to sort of build from the ground up, you know, not another, you know, 1 year bet on himself type of guy, but somebody who has a bit of a track record so that you enter spring training with some stability, because that's another piece in terms of bullpen success. You have to have starting pitchers that are reliable and are going to go deep into games in order for the bullpen to be able to play their roles. So I think acquiring a starting pitcher, whether it's Robbie Ray or somebody else, I think would be absolutely critical. And then I think that they need to add at least one other bat, preferably, you know, either left-handed or a switch hitter. I think that those two things right off the top would make for a relatively successful offseason. I said this on the podcast the other night and I stand by it. I do think there will be something that happens this offseason that is going to make Blue Jays fans say, whoa, wow, you know, let's go. I don't know what that will be. You know, I don't know, but I do think that they're in such a great position to, as you said, be all in. That was a word that Ross himself used today, was that this team is all in. And so I can't imagine that we're going to be disappointed with this offseason.
It's going to be exciting. We're going to have a ton of episodes of Locked On Blue Jays during the offseason. Jen, where can people find you on Twitter? Because you are a must follow, especially for all Blue Jays and baseball content.
People can follow me at baseball_Jen, and that is Jen with two N's.
MLB analyst Jen Smith on today's episode of Locked On Blue Jays. Thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. Now make your second listen Locked On MLB with Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call him Sully. He brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues, past and present. It's free and available on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is also free and available on all platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. That does it for us. Thank you so much for listening to today's Locked On Blue Jays episode. I'm Lucas Weiss. Have yourselves a wonderful night.